So imagine this. You just raised like $3 million for your dream startup.
Oh, that's the dream, right?
Right. You finally secured that seed round after, months of pitching. You've got this brilliant vision, a hungry market. The cash is actually sitting in the bank.
Best feeling in the world.
Totally.
Yeah.
Then you sit down to actually hire your team, Santa Monica, and you realize that hiring just three local engineers will completely bankrupt you in under a year.
Yeah, it's brutal.
It really is. So welcome to the mathematical nightmare of Silicon Beach in 2026.
It is, I mean, it's the great paradox of building a tech company today. You locate your business in this premium hub because you want to be surrounded by the absolute best talent, right? You want the venture capitalists, the
Yeah,
networking.
the whole ecosystem.
Exactly. And yet, actually employing that talent in the traditional, put them at a desk way has become fundamentally unviable for the vast majority of early stage founders. The math simply does not work anymore.
It's literally a mathematical wall. And that wall is exactly what we're exploring today on this deep dive. We are looking at a very specific survival strategy, a playbook, really, that the most successful companies are using to bypass this trap.
Or like the hybrid model.
Exactly. It's called the hybrid dev team. Now, our entire roadmap for this comes from a really comprehensive 2026 industry breakdown published by Technigian. They're an Irvine-based managed technology partner, and they have been quietly like architecting and managing these specific types of engineering teams all over the Los Angeles metro area.
And we really need to establish the stakes immediately here, because the source material isn't detailing some clever accounting trick, or a guide to finding the cheapest freelance labor on the internet.
Right, it's not a race to the bottom.
Not at all. What we are looking at is a massive structural evolution in how human capital is organized. It is a total rethink of management itself in a post-geographic tech world.
Which means whether you are scaling a software business right now, or maybe you're managing a complex cross-departmental project, or you're just, insanely curious about how the apps on your phone are actually being built behind the scenes. This breakdown of cost, culture, and architecture is going to give you a massive edge.
A huge advantage, yeah.
So let's start with the baseline reality that forces this shift. The source highlights that in the LA metro area right now, a senior software engineer's base salary averages over $165,000 a year.
Which is a substantial line item for any business, right? But it's particularly punishing when you have zero revenue.
Right. And here's where it gets really interesting. Because that $165,000, that's just the sticker price on the window.
Oh, yeah, the hidden costs.
Exactly. When you factor in equity packages, premium healthcare benefits, the California employer taxes, and just the physical cost of leasing office space in a premium zip code, the true fully loaded cost balloons to over $220,000 per engineer per year.
It's staggering when you actually look at the spreadsheet. It's terrifying. If you hire a lean team of, say, three seniors, you're burning nearly $750,000 a year just on payroll. And that's long before version one of your product ever sees the light of day.
Right. It creates a burn rate that basically leaves zero margin for error. And in software development, I mean, things inevitably break or take longer than projected. That's just a fact.
Always.
Always. So if one core feature gets delayed by like 3 months and your payroll is that heavy, the company simply dies. The runway just vaporizes.
Oof, gone.
Exactly. So the solution, Technigian outlines this hybrid development team, was born purely out of existential necessity.
Oh.
At its core, the hybrid model combines a localized, in-house anchor, usually a chief technology officer or a lead product owner sitting locally in the Santa Monica office,
Okay.
with a roster of remote or nearshore developers. But the critical, defining distinction here is that they are all managed under a single, unified workflow. Okay, I have to push back on that term for a second, because when I first read the source material, I
Right.
immediately thought, wait, isn't hybrid just a fancy 2026 corporate rebrand for
And
outsourcing?
that's the most common reaction, yes.
Right. But digging into the mechanics, here's the analogy that made it click for me. Traditional outsourcing is like drawing up a blueprint for a house, tossing it over a massive brick wall, and just hoping a completed, livable house eventually gets built on the other side.
Right, you have no visibility.
None. You don't see the concrete being poured. You don't talk to the plumbers. You just wait for the keys and cross your fingers that the roof doesn't leak. A hybrid team is fundamentally different. It is like inviting a team of remote builders directly into your own kitchen to cook the meal together, using your recipes, your pots, and your pans.
That is a highly accurate way to visualize the mechanism at play. Because what's fascinating here is how traditional outsourcing inherently creates misaligned incentives.
How so?
Well, it separates the vendor, whose primary goal is just to finish the contract as quickly as possible, from the core business, whose goal is to build a flawless product that actually users love. The hybrid model actively destroys that separation.
They're essentially the same team.
Exactly. These remote developers are given access to the company's internal communication tools. They attend the daily stand-ups. They operate as a direct, native extension of the local team. The barrier between us and them is completely removed, which fundamentally aligns the quality of the output with the vision of the founders.
That conceptual alignment makes total sense. But, I mean, it leads us to the most practical question. Does this actually save a startup's runway without destroying the product quality in the process?
Let's look at the numbers.
Yeah, let's do it. To answer that, the source provided a highly detailed 12-month cost comparison. Let's walk through it. This is based on building a mid-complexity SaaS product. And for anyone unfamiliar, SaaS stands for Software as a Service, basically any web app you subscribe to in your browser.
Like Netflix or Slack, yeah.
Exactly. And they're building this with a 6-person engineering team. So that's 2 senior devs, 3 mid-levels, a QA or quality assurance engineer to, you know, break the code and find bugs, and a DevOps person.
Right. And the DevOps person is essentially the bridge between the code the developers write and the live servers that host it. It is a very standard, robust squad for getting a real product to market.
Okay. So scenario one is building that 6-person team fully in-house locally in Santa Monica. By the time you add up the base salaries, you tack on $290,000 just for benefits and payroll taxes.
Well, ouch.
Right. And nearly $100,000 for office equipment, software licenses, and local management overhead. You are looking at a staggering $1.7 million a year.
And keep in mind, that is strictly the engineering budget. That doesn't account for marketing the product, legal fees, or the cost of acquiring your first customers. It's just to build the thing.
It's wild. Okay, scenario two is the total opposite.
Yeah.
Fully remote or outsourced. You hire a completely external agency somewhere overseas. This drops the cost drastically to $365,000.
Huge drop.
Massive. However, the Technigian guide explicitly warns against doing this for core product development. The communication friction and the risk of receiving a fundamentally flawed architecture are astronomically high. It is really only recommended if you have a short-term, highly isolated task that doesn't really touch your main product.
Because, returning to your analogy, you've thrown the blueprint over the brick wall, and you honestly have no idea what materials they are using to build the foundation.
Exactly. Which brings us to scenario three, the hybrid sweet spot. The total cost for this blended team comes to $541,500. According to the data, it delivers near in-house quality at just 32% of the cost of the fully local LA team.
I mean, if you do the math on that, it is a $1.2 million difference in a single year.
Wow.
That is not just a budget optimization, you know? That is the literal difference between a startup surviving long enough to raise their Series A round or folding entirely and sending everyone home.
Yeah, that's life or death for a company. And the text actually highlights a specific real-world application of this to prove the point. A Santa Monica-based fintech company augmented their 2-person local in-house team with a 6-engineer hybrid squad built out by Technigian. Not only did they slash their development cost by 52%, but they actually cut their time to launch from 14 months down to just 6 months.
That speed is incredible.
It really is. But I have to stop and ask, if we are cutting the budget by roughly 68% compared to the in-house model, aren't we just buying a cheaper parachute? Like, how does the quality of the actual code not take a massive hit when you pay that much less?
It's the most logical fear a founder can have, honestly. But if we connect this to the bigger picture, the cost savings aren't being generated by hiring subpar bargain bin talent. That's a huge misconception.
Where is the money coming from?
The savings are driven almost entirely by geographic wage arbitrage and the ruthless elimination of local physical overhead. When you hire a hybrid developer in, say, Argentina or Poland, you aren't paying California state employer taxes. You aren't leasing an extra 1,000 square feet of Class A commercial real estate in Silicon Beach.
Right.
You are eliminating that $80,000 in local management overhead the source cited. You are acquiring senior-level, highly experienced talent. They are just located in markets where the local cost of living allows for a completely different compensation rate.
Put simply, you are paying for the quality of the code, not the prestige of the zip code.
Precisely. And there is a secondary mechanism here that explains that massive jump in speed from 14 months down to 6 months. It's the 24-hour development cycle.
Oh, right.
Yeah, Technigian notes they typically build these teams in Latin America for nearshore alignment, or South and Southeast Asia for offshore. Let's look at a day in the life of this setup. If you structure the overlap correctly, the Santa Monica team might have a four-hour window where they are online at the same time as their counterparts in Asia.
So they have some crossover.
Right. During those core hours, they collaborate, they plan, they resolve blockers. Then, at 6 p.m., the founders in California close their laptops and go to sleep. But because the team is globally distributed, the remote engineers are just starting their day. Code is literally being written, features are being tested, and infrastructure is being deployed while the local anchor is asleep. When the LA team wakes up, the project has advanced.
It's like magic. Okay, so the financial upside is undeniable, and the speed advantage is baked into the geography. But, you know, execution is where dreams go to die. How do you keep a highly technical team spread across multiple continents and time zones from descending into absolute chaos?
This is where the methodology becomes the difference between success and a very, very expensive failure. You cannot simply hire talented people in three different time zones, invite them to a Slack workspace, and hope they figure it out.
Okay, let's unpack this. Because the source gives us Technigian's exact recommended operational structure, and there is one absolute non-negotiable requirement. They call it the in-house anchor.
Yes, the anchor.
This is your CTO, your lead engineer, or a deeply experienced product manager who sits locally in the main office. Their entire job is to own the vision, resolve ambiguity, and serve as the translator between the business goals of the startup and the daily engineering execution.
They are the keystone of the entire operation. Without them, the whole arch collapses.
I was thinking about this in terms of a symphony orchestra. The local anchor is the conductor. You can go out and hire the most expensive, technically gifted violinists and cellists from all over the world. But without the conductor standing at the front, keeping the tempo, and interpreting the emotional intent of the sheet music, you don't get a symphony.
No, you get noise.
Exactly. You just get a room full of highly paid musicians playing completely different songs at the same time. And for anyone listening right now who manages a remote team, whether you are in tech, marketing, or operations, this is the missing link.
It applies everywhere.
It does. If you feel like you are constantly herding cats on Slack and no one knows what the priority is, it's highly likely you haven't clearly designated a local anchor to hold the vision. The source even notes that every single failed outsourcing experience they've audited in Santa Monica lacked this localized technical owner.
The anchor is vital, but even the best conductor needs a system to operate within. And this is where agile methodology comes into play, but it has to be rigorously adapted for a distributed world.
Right. It can't just be standard agile.
Exactly. The text details a very specific, strict cadence. They use two-week sprints, which means every task has rigidly defined acceptance criteria that must be completed in 14 days. But the most interesting adaptation is the daily stand-up meeting.
Oh, this card blew my mind.
Right. Instead of forcing everyone onto a live call, they are strictly asynchronous, usually done via Slack threads or short screen recording videos using tools like Loom. Then you have a weekly live sprint review where the Santa Monica anchor and the full hybrid team sync up in real time, followed by bi-weekly retrospectives to analyze process failures.
I really want to pause on those asynchronous stand-ups, because for a lot of traditional managers, canceling a live daily Zoom call feels like a massive step backward. It feels disconnected, like you were losing the pulse of your company culture.
It feels incredibly counterintuitive to people accustomed to a traditional office environment. But we have to look at the psychology and the friction of time zones here.
Right.
Forcing a live daily call across a 12-hour time difference creates immense quiet resentment. Someone is always dialing in at 10 p.m. while they're trying to put their kids to bed, or at 5 a.m. before they've even had coffee.
Nobody wants to do that.
Nobody. What's fascinating is that asynchronous video updates actually force a much higher quality of communication. When a developer has to record a Loom video explaining what they did yesterday and where they are stuck today, they have to synthesize their thoughts. Often, just the act of articulating the problem out loud, a concept in programming known as rubber ducking, forces them to solve their own problem before they even hit send.
That's brilliant.
It is. But the real glue holding all of this async work together is what Technigian calls obsessive documentation.
Yes, because the number one killer of hybrid team productivity is knowledge that is trapped inside one person's head. If your lead architect in Los Angeles goes out for a two-hour lunch, the developer in Poland shouldn't have to sit on their hands totally blocked, waiting for an answer on how a database is structured.
Precisely. So to combat this, they enforce the use of ADRs, or architecture decision records, for every single major technical choice.
Let's define that for the non-engineers listening. An ADR is essentially a receipt for a decision. Instead of just picking a database, you write a short document saying, on this date, we chose this specific database, and here are the three reasons why we chose it over the alternatives.
Exactly. It creates a historical roadmap of the system's logic. They use platforms like Confluence or Notion as living, breathing hubs of company information. They require Loom video walkthroughs for any complex feature before it gets handed off to another developer, and detailed runbooks for all server deployment processes. The culture basically becomes, if it isn't written down or recorded, it simply does not exist.
Okay, so we've established that obsessive documentation and async communication are the glue for this team. But a team spread across three continents can't just share a Dropbox folder and hope for the best.
No, definitely not.
They need an infrastructure that inherently supports distributed building. So what exactly is this Santa Monica fintech team using to pull this off? Let's look at the dominant 2026 tech stack the source outlines and why it actually enables this model.
The technology itself is the vehicle that makes the methodology possible.
Right. For the front end, so the part of the app the user actually sees and clicks on, they use React and Next.js. This allows developers to build modular, reusable pieces of the interface quickly. For the back end, the brain of the app that processes the data, they lean heavily on Node.js and Python.
And Python is especially crucial now because integrating AI and machine learning features has become a baseline requirement for almost every new startup.
Absolutely. And for databases, the memory, it's PostgreSQL.
But the truly critical layer for hybrid teams is the cloud infrastructure.
Exactly. They use AWS, or Microsoft Azure, combined with Docker and Kubernetes for containerized deployments. And let's explain why Docker is so magical for remote teams. Imagine Docker as a standardized shipping container for software.
Okay, good analogy.
In the old days, a developer in LA might write code that works perfectly on their specific Mac, but when they send it to a developer in India using a PC, it just crashes. Docker packs the code, the tools, and the exact operating environment into one digital container. It means a remote hybrid developer can download that container and spin up the exact same environment as the anchor in Santa Monica in like 3 seconds, entirely eliminating that classic, well, it works on my machine excuse that used to delay remote projects for weeks.
Right. It creates a standardized playing field regardless of hardware or geography.
But even with the perfect tools and the perfect cloud setup, the source outlines five fatal mistakes that will absolutely torpedo a hybrid team. Number one, hiring for cost alone. Number two, lacking a single source of truth for project management. Number three, skipping code reviews. Number four, ignoring security. And number five, having no exit plan if a key engineer suddenly leaves.
Let's focus on that first one because it is the siren song that lures founders onto the rocks.
Hiring for cost alone. It is so incredibly tempting to look at a spreadsheet and pick the developer charging $25 an hour over the one charging $65. But hiring a bargain bin developer is like using cheap, diluted cement for the foundation of a skyscraper.
Yeah, it won't hold up.
You feel brilliant on day one because you save money. But by floor 10, the building is physically leaning, the walls are cracking, and your highly paid local anchor has to spend all of their time desperately trying to patch the foundation instead of building the roof. The source explicitly points out that a cheap developer who writes buggy code, requires constant handholding, and misses deadlines ultimately costs the company vastly more in time and technical debt than the senior developer who just ships clean code independently.
It is the ultimate illusion of savings. You are paying for their mistakes with the in-house anchor's time, and the anchor's time is your most finite and expensive resource.
100%.
But looking at that list of fatal mistakes, this raises an important question about mistake number four, ignoring security.
I hear that, but practically speaking, doesn't layering massive amounts of security over a distributed team just slow the developers down? Like, if the whole point of a hybrid team is speed and a 24-hour cycle, aren't we introducing a ton of bureaucratic red tape?
It's a trade-off you have no choice but to make because the architecture of risk changes radically. In a traditional, fully local model, your security perimeter is largely physical. It's the key card to the office and the local Wi-Fi network.
Right.
In a hybrid model, the cybersecurity surface area explodes. You have remote access points from personal home networks in different countries, distributed credentials, and shared cloud repositories. You cannot simply trust a connection just because someone logged in with a company email address. You have to engineer trust into the infrastructure itself.
So how is Technigen advising startups to handle that without grinding development to a halt?
They enforce a set of mandatory practices from day one, starting with zero trust architecture.
Let's translate zero trust. Traditional security is like a castle moat. Once you lower the drawbridge and someone is inside the castle walls, they can basically wander into any room they want. Zero trust means there is no moat, but there are armed guards checking your ID at every single internal door, every single time you turn a doorknob, regardless of who you are.
That is exactly right. Every single request for access to a system is treated as potentially hostile until verified. They pair this with mandatory multi-factor authentication on every tool. Furthermore, they implement strict secrets management.
Which is huge.
Massive. In amateur development, a programmer might type a sensitive password or an API key directly into the code. If that code gets copied or stolen, the hackers have the keys to the kingdom. Secrets management uses a digital vault. The code just asks the vault for permission, meaning the actual passwords are never visible. You aren't just managing a team of developers, you are managing a global, highly volatile network of access. Skipping even one of these steps could result in a data breach that ends a startup faster than running out of funding.
Which ties perfectly back into mistake number two, lacking a single source of truth for project management. When you have developers in three different countries, and one is getting instructions via a Slack direct message, another is reading an email thread, and the local anchor is tracking progress in a physical notebook on their desk.
It's a nightmare.
No one actually knows what the definition of done is. The project splinters. The source demands ruthlessly enforcing a single tool, like Jira or Linear, where every single feature request, bug report, and status update lives. If it isn't in Jira, you do not work on it.
It removes the ambiguity that destroys momentum.
So what does this all mean? Let's bring this back to you, the listener. Whether you are a CTO trying to architect a scalable new app, a marketing director trying to coordinate a global content team, or just someone trying to organize a complex community project, the era of choosing purely between burning cash on a fully local team or risking everything on a faceless outsource agency is over.
The hybrid dev team proves that geography is no longer a constraint on quality, provided you have the discipline to manage the system.
The principles we've unpacked today are really a masterclass in modern management for any industry. You absolutely must have a clear local anchor to hold the vision. You have to rely on obsessive, centralized documentation so that institutional knowledge doesn't walk out the door when someone quits. And you have to integrate your remote members natively, treating them as core components of your mission, not just cheap, expendable labor across an ocean.
The framework provides incredible leverage for founders, but it does leave us with a broader, somewhat uncomfortable implication to consider as we look toward the future of these tech hubs.
Oh, where do you see the catch?
If this hybrid model where the senior leadership, the visionaries, the anchors stay in expensive places like Santa Monica,
yeah,
but all the mid-level and junior development work is distributed globally, if that becomes the absolute gold standard for building a company, what happens to the entry-level jobs in those local hubs?
Oh, wow.
Right. If Silicon Beach startups no longer need to hire junior local talent to scale, does the ecosystem eventually hollow out its own future pipeline? Think about it. How do you become a seasoned senior local anchor in 2035 if there were no local junior jobs available to train you in 2026?
Man, that is a heavy, fascinating, and incredibly necessary question to ponder. The very strategy that is mathematically saving these startups today might fundamentally alter the DNA of the tech ecosystem tomorrow. That is going to be something to watch.
Definitely.
Thank you so much for joining us on this deep dive. As you move forward this week, look at your own teams, examine your own workflows, and ask yourself, are you just tossing blueprints over a brick wall, or have you actually invited your team into the kitchen? We'll see you next time.